Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. I welcome everyone from all over the world to this program. Today, the latest on how you can overcome seasonal allergies, and a lot of people are suffering right now from that, and also the radiation from your cell phone and the towers that relay those signals can up the cancer risk. We know that the calcium from dairy can contribute to kidney stones. New research is going to show you what reverses that. And grapeseed, a whole lot of good when it comes to inflammation. Flavonoids reduce the risk of diabetes. Every day, we only cite peer-reviewed, mainstream, scientific, independent studies showing you why making healthy choices can allow you to prevent or overcome or improve disease and live a longer life. Today, from our public health comment, from Zach Caldevier and Ronnie Cummins from the Organic Consumer Association, why labels on genetically engineered foods won't cost consumers a dime. Right now in the state of Washington, there's a piece of legislation, a Citizens Ballot Initiative, that would require mandatory labeling of foods that contain genetically engineered ingredients. It's called 522. We know exactly what's going to happen. The major biotech companies will hire physicians and scientists and possibly celebrities. They will inundate the airwaves to try to create fear in people's minds that you shouldn't have your food labeled if it's genetically engineered. We'll explain what those lies are because a lot of people are listening right now from the state of Washington. But we have 40 other states at the grassroots level that are also getting citizens initiatives, and they're doing it at a grassroots level. So sooner or later, we're going to win one of these. I'll talk about that today. Also today, Obama's War on Social America from Stephen Ledman from Global Research. We've been led to believe that Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid are entitlements. They are not. I'll explain why almost everything you've been led to believe is wrong. The guest in the second part of my program today will be Rachel Maripol. We're going to talk about the Federal Communications Management Units. That doesn't sound bad. Federal Communications Management Units? Does that something to do with radio or television or the internet? No. It's America's secret prisons for political prisoners. You're thinking, that's not possible. Yes, it is. We have them, and there's more planned, and that's what she's here. And she's the senior attorney at the Center for Constitutional Rights. They are in Washington, D.C., protecting us, or New York, to protect us, and protect the U.S. Constitution and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So we're going to talk about America's secret jails, how we got them, who's in them, and why you should be very concerned. Let's begin. In allergy seasons, the vast majority of people, once their eyes start to water and their nose runs and sometimes their earlobes get red, they go to the drugstore and they'll get some form of analgesic relief. But that doesn't change what's happening in the body, just change that they won't feel the symptoms of it. According to the Harvard Health Letter, seasonal allergies are starting earlier every year. Callum point counts are going up, and almost 40 million Americans are affected, so it's a lot of people. So what can we do? Now, if you've been hearing me say that I believe that we should focus upon our immune response to allergies, and then I divided that into different categories, our emotional immunity, Meaning when you're a happy person, you're happy with life, you're content, you feel joy, you feel almost a sense of grace living through a day. What a wonderful day to be alive. Your whole immune system vibrates. The same is true at the opposite end of that spectrum. Remember, every truth must have its opposite, always present. So you can't say that the immune system works for you in a good way, meaning you're less allergenic and less susceptible to disease because you're thinking positive thoughts without also acknowledging the other half of that equation. Stress, depression, anger, rage, negativity, jealousy, envy, greed, insecurity, uncertainty, all work against your immune system. They overstimulate it, they depress it, and that's why many people who become stressed by anything, generally within 24 to 48 hours, will come down with a sore throat or some form of infection. And that also then triggers greater susceptibility to allergies. That's why I always try to help people de-stress. Take all the tension out of their emotions. But then you work on the physical level too, the biochemical level, cleansing and detoxifying. It's amazing how many people say that their eyes get whiter, their tongue is pinker, their gums healthier, their breath sweeter when they've been juicing and cleansing and detoxifying, and they're less susceptible to allergens. Here are some things you can do, and it's all fully documented. To calm all allergic reactions, and there was an article in the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine on this, is something I've been suggesting for at least 20 years, MSM. This is a methyl form of a very powerful immune modulator. It impacts the respiratory systems. It reduces the impact of congestion in the chest for about 7 days. About 2,500 milligrams of MSM. Very simple, inexpensive, easy to do. Now, MSM is about 35% sulfur. And you've heard me say that sulfur is your number one detoxifying nutrient. That's why garlic and onions and shallots and chives are so important. Well, MSM is loaded with sulfur. Helps the body produce glutathione. And glutathione is your liver's most important antioxidant. And you can take it safely with at high doses. Now, another substance that helps calm down the immune system under pollen attack is the alpine herb called butterbur, B-U-T-T-E-R-B-U-R. In fact, in Scotland, researchers found that butterbur is very effective and commonly used, but they use it in conjunction with MSM. The sulfur to condition the body and the herb to actualize the acute attacks that occur. It turns off the inflammation in those acute attacks. It's good for migraine headaches. In fact, it's good for all types of headaches. And then freeze-dried nettles with quercetin. Quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N. That helps reduce allergic reactions. Why? Because quercetin is one of the best antihistamines that you can possibly take in. I suggest not taking regular antihistamines because it creates drowsiness. And if you're out there driving, you don't want to be drowsy. But quercetin doesn't create anything except good effects. And it also helps prevent bruising. It helps your skin when your skin is creating new collagen, which is the underlying connective tissue. So when you have plenty of vitamin C and quercetin, then your skin's going to be tighter. It'll be fuller, and you'll be less likely to have that jowiness and sagging. Also, it's very important to remember that you're going to be far more allergic if you have leaky gut syndrome and you don't have good intestinal bacteria. So by taking in things such as let's say, probiotics twice a day, 4 to 10 billion units per each time. And by taking glutamine at 3,000 milligrams, alpha-lipoic acid at 400 milligrams, and I would also take D-ribose at 3,000 milligrams, that helps you with your intestine and leaky gut syndrome. All of those are good. The more vegetables you eat, the less allergies you're going to end up having. So that's what I would do with allergies. Now, I believe it was 3 years ago, I was asked to join a demonstration and be a speaker on the Upper West Side concerning putting these towers on buildings. And I brought the research, and there were some state legislators there, and I brought research proving that they increase the radiation in the surrounding area. And most people are not even aware that these towers are on the buildings. And the landlord, the owner of the building, gets a rental fee, and the people who are living in the building get radiation. Because remember, that's where the satellite is beaming straight down. That hits that that hits the tower, and then the tower beams it out within a given area. Here's the latest on this, and it says, studies were conducted on mobile radiation, quote, with 1W power, same output as cell phones. Temperatures increased by 1 centimeter in 500 seconds, which is 9 minutes. And this Dr. Coomer was speaking at the National Seminar on Mobile Phone and Tower Radiation Risks and Remedies and said it's very serious. Quote, mobile companies are choosing to install higher intensity towers to cut costs, but we're compromising on public safety. Citing a case where 6 residents of a building facing a mobile tower were affected by cancer, went on to explain the link of rise in cancer cases among residents living near cell towers. Quote, those living in a 50 to 300, it says M radius, facing a high risk, much worse than smoking, as you cannot see or smell radiation. You cannot have coincidences everywhere. Biological effects, including drying of fluids around the eyes, heart and abdominal problems leading to sleep disruption, headaches, lack of concentration and memory loss, changes in electrical activity of the brain, prolonged exposure to mobile radiation increases chance of cancer by 400% over 8 years. It also impacts pregnancy, increases miscarriages, and affects the amniotic fluids. And he also looked at farmhouses and said that he observed mobile tower radiations was affecting the environment and fruit-bearing trees as well as birds. So everywhere you look, when you do the actual research, you're finding that cell phones themselves and cell towers are causing biochemical and genetic disruption. Now, there's principally two types of calcium. Most people eat the calcium made from dairy, but there's also non-dairy calcium. For example, if you have a plate of sea vegetables, nori, kombu, wekame, hijiki, you're getting a lot of calcium, high-quality calcium. But if you add kale, you're getting calcium as well. This is the latest research on this topic. It says from Reuters, getting plenty of calcium from foods has been shown to lower the likelihood of kidney stones in those most at risk. But a new study makes clear the benefit isn't just linked to milk products. In a large new analysis, men and women who consumed the most dietary calcium from foods had a 20% lower risk of developing kidney stones than those that consumed the least amount. Quote, there's another piece of data to suggest there's, you know, a role for this, and that's important. In lay language, what this means is this. Make sure that you're eating your green, dark green, root vegetables and leafy vegetables, and you'll be getting lots of calcium. Grape seed oil. You generally find it in a small little can in the health food stores. And It's very concentrated because, remember, grapes are very small to begin with, and the grape seeds are tiny. But they're really healthy. Here's the latest. This is from the Department of Nutrition, School of Nutrition, Tabriz University Medical School, and it says, in a study involving overweight or obese women, supplementation with grapeseed oil through a weight loss diet for a period of 8 weeks was found to be associated with reductions in the hsCRP and TNF-alpha. These are all, by the way, these are factors in inflammation, tumor necrosis factor. So what this says is this. When you have a teaspoon of grapeseed extract, you're improving the body's anti-inflammatory response. You're also helping, if you're overweight, insulin resistance. So think how many people are overweight and have inflammation. In fact, they almost go together. Inflammation of the joints, like the knees if you're overweight. So add a teaspoon of cold-pressed organic grapeseed oil to your diet each day. And those wonderful flavonoids, that's what you get when you eat an apple, when you eat an onion, when you have some berries, loaded with flavonoids. This is the latest. Intake of dietary flavonoids linked to reduced risk of type 2 diabetes. That's good. And this was from the School of Public Health, Wuhan University in China. And it says, in this meta-analysis, that means many studies, meta-analysis, involving 18,000 cases and almost 284,000 people, those who consume the highest amount of flavonoids, meaning fruits and vegetables, had the lowest risk of type 2 diabetes. So there's another one. You know, we just see one study after the other after the other. The more fruits and vegetables, either fresh, organic, or if they were dried, sun-dried, or naturally dried, and then rehydrated, which you can do too. Look, I'm even as we speak today, I'm building two aquaculture units with two completely different systems and a new invention I've come up with, how to get 10 times more produce out of a given environment. And I'll be putting the photographs of this up because photographs are being taken every day. And I'm growing more than what I can possibly consume, and I give to local church groups to help homeless families. But then I still have leftover. I don't like to see things rot, so I dry them. It's easy. Some things I dry in the sun because I did as a kid, and I love doing that. But other things, I just use a low 110, 115 degree dehydrator. You put them in, wash them, always wash them first. Then you put them in on the screen, you close a little door, and turn it to the temperature you want, and in the morning you take them out and they're dry. Put them in an environmental green bag and press out the air and put them away. They'll last for years. Years. Always date everything that you're buying for future use, even though some things will outlast you. That's how long some things, depending upon how they're preserved, can last. Even just a can of beans off the shelf can last 3 to 5 years in most cases. Beans, dried pulses, dried legumes, stored properly. Lower the temperature, the longer they last. But always date it so that you know when you start it. And finally, ginger supplementation can improve insulin sensitivity in type 2 diabetes. That's good news. This was, quote, in a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial, patients with type 2 diabetes supplemented with ginger for a period of 2 months were found to be associated with an improved insulin sensitivity and an improved lipid profile, meaning cholesterol. And it significantly lowered levels of insulin. That's terrific. So it lowered cholesterol. It helped maintain better triglycerides, and it made the body less prone to any form of dysinsulinism or metabolic syndrome. And that saves lives. My suggestion, when you're juicing each day, simply take one little piece. Like if you're watching right now, see my fingers? That is all you need, about that size, that by that 2-inch square, and you juice it. If you're going to eat it, skin it first, and then slither it, and then lightly saute it at low temperature with your favorite seasonings. And then you can mix that into any kind of dish that really tastes better. All right, so that's the latest on health and nutrition. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. To welcome all of you from all over the world. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting live from our studios and sending out the signal all over the place. And thank you for taking the articles that we post every day, the original articles, and then sharing with people, because that's how we make a difference, sharing important insights, videos, commentaries with one another. Theater for the New City screening Seeds of Death. I'll be there for a lecture and discussion afterwards. Tuesday, April 30, 7:30, call for reservations, 212-254-1109. 212-254-1109. If you care about the environment, if you care about genetically engineered foods, knowing why they're bad and what we can do, you won't want to miss the film Seeds of Death. Woodstock Community Center, screening Seeds of Death. I'll be there Saturday, April 27th, 7 p.m. So that's that. I want to offer our special today, and it's one of the favorites. We've been out of it. We just got it back in today. It's the Coco Magic Bar. Why should you be interested in it? Well, because it provides 100% of your daily fruits and vegetables. And it contains no dairy, no trans fats, no refined sugars, no preservatives. And it's based upon the FDA's or the USDA's ORAC values derived from the superfoods that are in here. What's in the bar? Well, first, it tastes spectacular. All you taste is coconut blended with chocolate. Two great tastes. Separately and terrific taste together. Then it's vegan, it's organic, it's kosher, it's gluten-free. It has 12 grams of high-quality protein, the omega-3 fatty acids, 40 different antioxidants, 3 high-quality vegan probiotics. What's in it? Only the best. Spirulina, barley grass, chlorella, wheatgrass, wheat sprouts, nori seaweed, acai berry, green tea extract, white tea extract, spinach, dulse, carrots, broccoli sprouts, parsley, alfalfa sprouts, raspberries, pomegranates, blueberries, mulberries, golden berries, apples, goji berry, Concord grape, grape seed extract, pine bark, mangosteen, hydrilla, strawberry leaf extract, ground flaxseed, bilberry, rice bran, beet juice, soy lecithin, acerola, rosehip, aloe vera, milk thistle, ginger, camu, lusuma powder from South America, maca powder from South America, mesquite powder from South America, probiotics, digestive enzymes, and natural resveratrol, the omega-3 derived from the plant-based bioperine, which is natural black pepper, hemp powder, and chia seeds. Whoa. non-GMO, organic, delicious, nutritious. So that's what's in the Coco Magic Bar. And it's yours. All you got to do is make a call. At a special price today, they get it on discount. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065 for your Coco Magic Bars. I carry them with me because I never know when I'm going to be so busy filming or investigating or doing whatever I do. So I always carry some bars. And this way I know I've got good, outstanding, superior, delicious, nutritious nutrition with me wherever I'm at. In fact, I generally take a whole box when I go on a plane, and I don't know the people around me, but if they see me eating my lunch, you know, and I always take a special lunch that I make, and or dinner, depending upon how long the flight is, and they're always kind of surprised when I take it out, and it's beautiful, prepared, it looks like a gourmet meal, and they're looking at their chicken Kiev, which I don't think is chicken, and I know it wasn't made in Kiev, and it's probably mystery rat meat from someplace. In any case, I smile and I explain what it is, and then I give them a Coco Magic Bar. And I say, well, this is a different type of snack. And at first, they don't understand because it tastes better than a junk food bar. And then I explain how it's made, and they go, really? And as if, surprise, surprise, you can actually make something taste great that's actually healthy and good for you. Coco Magic Bar, it's on sale. Nothing like it. 877-627-5065. Guilt-free snack. My guest in about 3 or 4 minutes, a commentary from Stephen Ledman of Global Research, Obama's War on Social Media. Obama and Republicans and most Democrats are in lockstep. They claim Medicare and Social Security are going broke. They lie, saying so. When properly administered, both programs are sound. Modest adjustments only are needed to assure it. They're federally mandated. They're not entitlements. They're contractual obligations. They're for eligible recipients who qualify. Payroll taxes fund them. Social Security provides retirement, disability, survivorship, and death benefits. It's America's most effective poverty reduction program. It's worked remarkably well since inception. It provides secure inflation-adjusted retirement or disability income. Personal savings aren't risked. It's not going bankrupt. Now, as an aside, last week I shared with this audience that I was just appalled when I listened to some of the commentaries on Fox, that I'm appalled by everything I hear on that station, because they are just lacking any sense of honesty, integrity, or scholarship in anything they broadcast. And they were talking about this entitlement. Well, excuse me. I'm going to call out some people now. I would appreciate if Sean Hannity could show me where the government funds Social Security. I'd like to see the bookkeeping ledger. Sean, I'm under the distinct impression that from the time we began working, that 15% a before-tax income for our entire working life is taken out from our employer and ourselves. Not a penny is given by the government. Did I miss something? So it's my savings. It's your savings. The government didn't give it to us. We earned it. We put that aside so when we do retire, depending upon how long we live, we will have something to help us when we are of need of that money. How is that an entitlement? Why is that even being discussed? Well, for simple reason, because the government has been raiding Social Security funds to the tune of $2.3 or more trillion dollars to pay for things that they have never delineated properly to us. We assume that a lot of it has gone for the war effort. And now they're afraid that at some point it will run out of money based upon how many people are retiring versus how many are coming into the workforce. Well, why don't you cut back on real entitlements? I'm opposed to some entitlements. I don't believe we should give any entitlements to corporations. I believe that there shouldn't be any entitlements at all. to the banking industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the agricultural industry. None. Not a nickel. I believe if they're really smart and innovative, that they will find ways of being profitable for themselves and for their shareholders, which they deserve. But if the only reason you're able to survive is because we, the people, are supporting you through our tax dollars, and then you turn around and you cut our earned savings, like Social Security, well, that's criminal. Why aren't you being called out on this? But then the real reason is they want to privatize it because there's trillions of dollars at stake. And most of the people on Wall Street would stampede over their own mothers if they had a chance to pick up a dollar on the street. Such greedy, low-life, degenerate bastards. Wow, I can't tell you the contempt I have for people working in American finance. And politicians. And most lawyers. And most of the media. And most of corporate America. Well, that's a few people. Jesus, man. What? I can't believe how stupid we are. So back to what Stephen Ledman was saying before my distraction there. The same holds true for Medicare. It's America's largest health insurance program. Payroll deductions defray costs. Tens of millions rely on it. It covers eligible recipients ages 65 or older, some disabled ones under 65, and people of all ages with end-stage renal disease. The scaremongers claim both programs face bankruptcy. They're on the chopping block for elimination. Obama's on board. Corporate and imperial priorities matter most. Straight away in office, he prioritized cutting health care costs. He called it restoring fiscal discipline. The big problem is Medicare, he said. It cost is unsustainable. Let's not kid ourselves and suggest that we can solve this problem by trimming a few earmarks. The biggest cost drivers in our budget are entitlement programs like Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, all of which get more and more expensive every year. If you want to get serious about fiscal discipline, and I do, we will have to get some serious about entitlement reform, end quote. All right, Mr. President, let's say we all agree with you. Nobody wants to fund any program, bad side, the corruption. So get rid of the corruption. But if you really want to bring in medical cost, why penalize the patient? Why not bring down the cost of expensive prescription drugs? That's $300 billion. And those expensive for-profit hospital costs. That's another $500 billion. And what about all the bureaucracy and profit-taking inside the insurance agencies? That's almost $1 trillion. Well, that's pretty easy. Why not promote prevention? That would prevent the diseases in the first place, most of them. And why not look at natural, non-toxic ways of helping conditions we know could be helped? That would save at least $200 or $300 billion. Why not do no-fault health insurance? So all doctors and all hospitals pay 1% of their annual income into a collective pool, and therefore no doctor or hospital could be sued. And if they found that there was negligence or harm done to them, they would be paid based upon the same rate as what they would have lost in earnings. And therefore, there wouldn't be the ambulance chasing, you know, corporate trial lawyers who are so greedy and all over that. That would mean you would get rid of all excessive medical testing. And a lot of that medical testing is extremely harmful. Just some suggestions. Because I believe that we have no knowledge of what it means to be healthy in America today. The very people are saying that we need to cut these entitlements, as they call them, are not looking at the fact that we have no preventative program for children. As a result, we have an epidemic of diabetes in children, obesity in children, and the first generation in American history where many of the children will not outlive their parents. They will die before their parents. And yet, we made sure through ALEC and lobbying by a group of 11 individuals in the House of Representatives that the government, through Medicare, Medicaid, and the VA, could not choose less expensive generic medications. That meant that the pharmaceutical industry over the course of 10 years would earn about an additional $1 trillion in profits. So why don't you look for where the real waste is and corruption and malfeasance? Why blame the patient who needs help and cannot get it? And why don't you try to actually prevent something, like prevent disease? I forgot. That would mean that those people who supported campaigns from, let's say, the fast food franchise, the refined confectioners franchise, that those people would be offended. So let's not talk about what really causes obesity and diabetes and heart disease. Those are some thoughts. Back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. My guest is standing by, but I just want to mention the good work of the Organic Consumers Association. They're out there with Ronnie Cummings and others leading the effort to try at the grassroots level to get ballot initiatives in the different states to require mandatory labeling of foods that contain genetically engineered ingredients. But let me also say that voters should be prepared for an onslaught of discrediting talking points. These are nonsensical red herrings. They're outright lies designed to convince voters that they shouldn't have the right to know what's in the food they eat. Topping the bioindustry's propaganda playlist will no doubt be this old familiar tune that requiring retailers to verify non-GMO ingredients in order to label them will be burdensome and costly, and the additional costs will be passed on to consumers who are already struggling to feed their families. Playing to consumers' fears for higher food costs makes good strategic sense, especially in tough economic times, but the argument doesn't hold water, and that's the fact of it. The system involves using chain of custody, legally binding affidavits, not expensive testing. Quote, "We have used the affidavit system repeatedly without the undue burden of cost," end quote, said Trudy Bielik, Director of Public Affairs for Seattle-based PCC, Natural Products Market, the largest consumer-owned natural food retail cooperative in the United States. The using of affidavit system to ensure their product is made without using child labor, their dairy products don't come from animals subjected to BGH hormones, and that all seafood was harvested using sustainable sources and practices. Trader Joe's, a privately held chain of nearly 400 U.S. stores, confirmed that the company's private label products under the names Trader Joe's, Jose's, and Ming's are GMO-free, though the company doesn't label them as such. And again, it's not about cost. So don't be misled by their propaganda. And finally, we just managed to get Monsanto's annual report today. Guess who's on their board of directors of Monsanto? Janice Fields, president of McDonald's Corporation, yes, the junk food chain. Arthur Harper, managing partner of GenX Capital Partners, a big private equity firm. You know how nice private equity firms are when it comes to buying up small companies, loading them up with debt, and then taking that excess profit for themselves. Laura Ipsen, VP of Microsoft for its worldwide public sector. Gwendolyn King, a former Exelon, the nuclear energy company. Sarah McMillan, former chair of Sara Lee. Joe Mollier, Procter & Gamble. Robert Stevens, chair of Lockheed Martin, Obama's Committee for Trade Policy Negotiations. George Aposte, with Council on Foreign Relations, and member of the Department of Defense's Science Board. Gee whiz, what a group of people to be affiliated with. Well, that's Monsanto. Let's go over and say hello now to Rachel Maripol, senior attorney at the Center for Constitutional Rights, which is a nonprofit legal organization advancing and protecting the rights guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. She is also the co-editor and the primary author of the Jailhouse Lawyer's Handbook, which, by the way, is a widely requested resource for prisoners, and the editor of America's Disappeared, Secret Imprisonment, Detainees, and the War on Terror, published by one of my publishers, Seven Stories Press. And Rachel is currently lead legal counsel on the class action lawsuit Turkmen versus Ashcroft on behalf of the Arab and Muslim men rounded up in immigration sweeps after 9/11. Nice to have you with us today.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on the show.
We have now become aware of the communications management units. Would you take us through what these are, why there has been no real media attention on this? Who are in these places, and why should we have them?
Sure. So there are now two communications management units within the Federal Bureau of Prisons, the federal prison system. The first unit was created in 2006 and the second in 2008. One is in Marion, Illinois, and one is in Terre Haute, Indiana. Now, these units were created secretly, the first by the Bush administration. The Bush administration had, proposed a federal rule, a new federal rule, to create a unit for terrorist prisoners within the federal prison system. And there was such outcry by civil liberties organizations and prisoners' rights advocates when the administration proposed this rule that they scrapped it. They didn't finalize a rule at all. Instead, they just opened one of these units secretly under a new name. Instead of calling it a terrorist control unit, as they had initially proposed, it was called a communications management unit. And as I said, a second unit was opened in 2008. So these units are about isolation and segregation. Prisoners sent to the units receive extremely limited ability to contact the outside world. They have only non-contact visits. That means when a prisoner's family member, even a young child, goes to visit him in prison, they can only talk over the telephone through glass. They can't touch, hug, hold hands. These are rights that most prisoners enjoy and are incredibly important to sort of maintaining a prisoner's contact with his family, with his loved ones, which increases rehabilitation and reduces the risk of recidivism after release. But prisoners in the CMU don't get these visits. They have extremely limited access to telephone calls. Most prisoners within the federal prison system get 300 minutes of telephone time a month. And these telephone minutes are incredibly important, since so many prisoners are sent to prisons far away from their family and their community. And telephone time is really the only way to maintain those contacts. Prisoners in the CMU originally got only one telephone call a week, one 15-minute telephone call a week, and are currently receiving two 15-minute telephone calls a week. How does a prisoner get sent to one of these units? This is one of the major problems. There is absolutely no meaningful process to determine who gets sent to a CMU. So when a prisoner is transferred to one of these units, they're given a one-page notice of transfer, which is supposed to explain why the individual needs to have his communications managed in this unique way. But really, the kind of information that's provided on the notice gives the prisoner no means to argue that he doesn't belong in a CMU or to find out why he's actually been sent there. So, for example, many people we spoke to were given notices of transfer that said something like, "Reliable evidence indicates that you have been involved in recruitment and radicalization within prison." Well, what's the reliable evidence, one might ask? What was I supposed to have done? Who did I recruit? Toward what end? When our clients and other prisoners have asked for that information, they're told, file a Freedom of Information Act request. They file a request, and all they receive in response is that same sentence, "Reliable evidence indicates your involvement in recruitment and radicalization." No more information about what they actually did. So these aren't units that prisoners are sent to because they violate a prison rule, for example. They hurt another prisoner, try to escape, do something like that. These are units that prisoners get sent to without process and without explanation.
They're probably,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
That represents, to me, that that has all the hallmarks of a political prisoner.
Well, exactly. So when there's no process, as one might expect, we see a pattern of retaliatory and discriminatory transfers. The majority of prisoners in the communications and management units are Muslim. There's a huge overrepresentation of Muslim prisoners in these units compared with the Muslim population in the Bureau of Prison overall. And that's largely based on this Bureau of Prison's idea that Muslim prisoners are particularly dangerous, that they will radicalize other prisoners and cause problems within the prison system. We also see jailhouse lawyers, prisoners who represent other prisoners in prison, who argue for prisoners' rights, who bother prison administrators by demanding that they are treated fairly. Prisoners like that are sent to these CMUs. And then finally, we see prisoners who've been sent to prison based on their political actions, environmental activists, animal rights activists with unpopular ideas, who are placed in the CMUs, as we call them, to limit the way that these prisoners can maintain contact with the social movements they came from, to limit their ability to continue to, you know, engage in dialogue on political issues with the outside world. One of our clients, Daniel McGowan, is an environmental activist who was sent to prison and transferred to a communications management unit 1 year into his prison sentence, despite the fact that he'd never violated a single prison rule and was actually a model prisoner at the low-security prison where he was being held. We learned through the course of our lawsuit, the Center for Constitutional Rights filed a lawsuit challenging these CMUs several years ago, and we learned through the course of the lawsuit that indeed Mr. McGowan was sent to the CMU, and this is written down in Bureau of Prisons documents, in part because of his communications with outside activists, because he talked about ways to bring unity to the environmental movement, because he wrote to people discussing different tactics the environmental movement uses and what might be effective and what might not. And it was this type of political speech, core political speech protected by the First Amendment, even in prison, that led to his transfer to a communications management unit.
Why would we, if you spoke on Fox Network, most of them would say if they committed any crime, it doesn't matter where they're transferred. They are a criminal and they're being treated under the guidelines of our federal bureaucracy. Show why these people are being treated differently than, let's say, a general prison population.
Well, due process applies even in prison, and a prisoner has the right to receive process before they get placed in a unit that is, you know, that is different from what prison life is generally like. So when an individual goes to prison, you know, a lot of times when we see prisons conveyed on movies and on TV, the type of, you know, a way a visit might happen in prison, you see this, you know, telephone call, a prisoner sitting behind glass, the visitor sitting on the other end without any ability to contact them physically. But in reality, most prison visits are contact visits. There's a large room, sort of like a cafeteria, where prisoners and their visitors can sit and talk. They can play card games, share food. They're allowed to hug when they greet each other and then hug again when they leave. And it's this type of ability to, you know, to reach out and touch your wife, your mother, your daughter, your son, that allows prisoners to maintain real, meaningful relationships with their family and with their community. And, of course, that is something we should all want. It's not just a matter of, you know, thinking that human beings deserve and need that kind of contact, but it's been proven time and time again that maintaining those kind of contacts is extremely important for public safety, that it means that when prisoners are released, they are less likely to go on and commit more crimes because they have maintained relationships and they've maintained a place in their community. In the communications management unit, there's no access to that type of visitation, and there's very limited access to telephone calls. And that means that, you know, these men receive much, much less ability to maintain their relationships, okay, to prepare for their release from prison. to take away those essential rights without explaining why, without giving the prisoners a chance to say, hey, I didn't do this thing that you're sort of obliquely accusing me of having done. Well, that's a due process violation.
I appreciate that, Rachel. I want to get to something that's concerned me, the FBI's Operation Backfire, to target the arrest and incarceration of animal rights and environmental activists. And aside from Operation Backfire, there are other FBI or other intelligence operations that you may know of that are targeting other groups of dissenters that we should be concerned about. And right now, after Obama's expansion of earlier Bush policies, security programs and operations are widening the scope of who can be arrested and detained under our now permanent Declaration of War on Terrorism and also the National Defense Authorization Act that can include peaceful protesters and journalists, just about anyone who disagrees with the government and the Department of Justice can be investigated and put on a watch list. And if you were to find massive, let's say, cruelty to animals that would not be in debate. Someone was butchering or brutalizing an animal. And if you photographed that or you reported on that, you would be arrested and put on a terrorist list, and you would be convicted or you could be tried under a terrorist set of rules instead of any other type of rules, and yet the perpetrators wouldn't be. So that means that almost anyone choosing to protest anything today is not going to have the basic constitutional and humanitarian rights that a free speech and due process of law. That's at least my take on it. I'd like your take.
Sure. Well, I'm glad you bring this up because I think it's one of the issues that's received, you know, so much less attention than it really needs. The Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act is a federal law that criminalizes causing damage or loss to an animal enterprise. And an animal enterprise is defined very broadly in the law as any corporation or organization that uses or sells animal products. And the law also protects organizations and people who do business with animal enterprises. So, you know, a Walmart that sells beef jerky, a university that has a cafeteria that serves meat, these are all animal enterprises. So as you can imagine, the scope of this law is incredibly broad. The law doesn't define to cause damage or loss. And that means that protesters whose lawful protest may harm the bottom line of a corporation, there's a protest and, you know, the company responds by hiring an extra security guard. That profit loss or that increased business cost can be used to send the protesters, the peaceful protesters, to prison as terrorists for causing this property loss. It's just ridiculous. The Center for Constitutional Rights has filed a federal lawsuit on behalf of 5 animal rights activists who claim that they've been chilled from engaging in protected First Amendment activity, from educating the public, for example, about foie gras and encouraging people not to eat it, from describing undercover videotape, exposing factory farming conditions. This type of activity that is core political speech that is now targeted as acts of terrorism under the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act. Now, that lawsuit, Blum v. Holder, was filed in federal court in Massachusetts last year, and I would encourage your listeners to follow the case and to learn more about the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act. You know, the law targets animal rights activists, who the FBI ridiculously labels as, you know, a number one domestic terrorist threat, despite the fact that these activists have never injured a human being in this country. The law targets animal rights activists, but it is written so broadly that any type of protester whose protest causes an animal enterprise to lose profit could potentially be targeted under the law. It's not limited to those whose actions are motivated by animal rights.
Okay, but let's just say that President Obama, who's a constitutional lawyer and was considered a constitutional scholar and a Harvard Review editor, and a professor, or at least an adjunct professor, we're not sure because I didn't see the actual transcript, but he taught at University of Chicago, that he must really support this because he's signing off on these or continuing to allow his Justice Department and the FBI that falls under that to prosecute these people. So what does this tell us about the individuals who advocated, and the Nation magazine and the others who advocated for Obama's reelection? Shouldn't they also be against, and shouldn't the Nation and most of the corporate liberals be out there protesting on behalf of McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicken and all these other places and against any of the environmental or animal rights people? Shouldn't they condemn and want to see in jail those people who are foolish enough, evidently, according to our Justice Department, the FBI, and President Obama, to want to trample on the profits of corporations instead of looking at the rights of animals?
Well, I think it's extremely important to call out President Obama on these issues.
No, I'm not calling out him out. Sorry, let's get this right, Rachel. I want to be clear on this, all right? I'm not calling out the clown who's a
proud.
I'm calling out the Nation magazine, all the other goddamn people who sanctimoniously declare that they're a good liberal, and I'm saying them, why don't completely support what he is supported through actions? That's what I'm calling out.
Right. Well, it's a fair point. It's a fair point. And I'd like to say that if people disagree, if people think that, you know, that it is our obligation to ensure and to continue fighting for President Obama to follow through on some of the promises he made to us, that he made to the left, that it is time for us to go out there and call on him to do that. And today is a perfect day to do that, because the Center for Constitutional Rights and other activists have called today a national day of action to close Guantanamo, you know, one of the most shameful policies that's been continued under the Obama administration, and to end indefinite detention. There's a protest going on today at Times Square at 3 o'clock. And I would urge all of your listeners to come out and to say, you know, we've taken this long enough. President Obama, it is time to close Guantanamo.
Okay, well, I appreciate what you're doing in your group. I've taken a look at what some of the how you have assessed Obama's record in relation to the principles of law stated in our Constitution and the Declaration of Human Rights. And I see that Obama's White House is able to work both sides of it. He's able to enamor through his personality and his charm, offensive, those on the left and the liberal class and the poor class. At the same time, almost every single policy he makes, every single appointment he makes from the USDA and the FDA and the National Department of Energy and all the rest are purely 100% corporate driven and Wall Street supported. So at what point does someone call all this and say, if I support the man unequivocally, then I must, by extension, support all of his policies? So I got to support the 1%. I can no longer shed a tear for the students and the double clicking of their interest up to 6%. I can't shed a tear for homeowners whose homes are being foreclosed on by the very banks that Obama's Federal Reserve has allowed to get over $16 trillion in interest-free loans to protect them. I must not support those who support getting out of Iraq. I cannot shed a tear for the citizens of Afghanistan or Iraq or Somalia or any place else. And so you start to realize, gee whiz, what did I actually vote for? And am I responsible at any level? Am I culpable at any level for not doing my homework to look to see what is actually being done in my name and with my vote? Your final thoughts, please.
I think given all that you've said, we as the left need to continue to fight. And, you know, I'm not at a point of giving up and saying that no good can come, that absolutely no good can come from this administration. I want to force him to make good. I've been incredibly disappointed, as I'm sure many of your listeners have. We need to continue fighting.
Rachel, thank you very much for all the good work you do, and hopefully people will join you today in your demonstration. At the very least, closing Guantanamo. But he never promised to close Guantanamo in his election campaign, did he? Yeah. Let me share 67.
Never, of course not. Good.
Rachel Maripol, thanks for being on, Rachel.
Oh, thanks for having me and for the important work you do.
And the website is ccrjustice.org, ccrjustice.org. They're doing good work, and I really respect them for the good work they do. I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on the next program. Now we'll go quickly over to Luann Panessi before we start the next program with you, Tree Sleet. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, I've got something here from Roger from New Jersey, and he said, I thought Gary would be most interested in this. This is coming from Andrea Paser.
I did not have sex with that woman. I don't think I did.
Now,
she tall,
Gary,
blonde? Well, maybe I did.
We didn't have time now, Gary. The nation of Malawi has been praised by this journalist. He says, the leaders of the small African country have accomplished a feat no human has had the nerve to try. They said no to the spoiled, entitled, rich, aging pop singer Madonna. Last weekend, Malawi unceremoniously sent Madonna packing from the country, making her 15-person entourage walk through checkpoints, endure personal searches, and sit among huddled masses in the airport steerage section. Unaccustomed to being treated like this, Madonna was said to be furious. Now, Madonna travels with her kids, including two Malawians she adopted under questionable circumstances, treating human beings like trophies for her single mom's child collection. This fanatical bartering in human flesh seems to be the source of scorn from the Malawi government. So from the start of her week-long humanitarian trip, her antics angered President Joyce Banda, who took office last year and refuses to bow to Madonna. So she sent her packing. So there, Roger is saying, thankfully, we do have countries that aren't going to put up with this crap.
Good. Well, the last word in describing Madonna is absolutely biologically correct. Thank you, Luann. Let's say hello to you, Therese Lead. Hi, you, Therese.
Wow, you're in fine form today, Gary.
I am.
Well, we are going to be talking about the topic today is gunning for a win. And we'll be talking about behind Michelle Obama's teary-eyed speech in Chicago yesterday.
Good. We look forward to it. You, Therese Lead, coming right now.
Absolutely.